Marcus, thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Let me read to you the verses that should be on your sheet that you've got there printed out, and then we'll dive into our question. So Mark chapter 8. And he called to him the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? For what can a man give in return for his life? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." So our question this afternoon is, would Christianity ruin my life? And I wonder how you would answer that question. I wonder if, maybe if you've been a Christian for many years, I wonder if you could honestly and genuinely recommend it. I wonder if in the same way you might go back to the water cooler at work now and recommend the latest film or the new gym, could you actually recommend being a Christian? And if you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, I really like this question, because it recognizes that the decisions people make are complex, that the decision about whether to be a Christian is not a decision all about truth. Christianity could be as true as you like and as proved as you like, but some people still wouldn't want it to be true, wouldn't want to believe it because of what it means for your life. So would Christianity ruin my life? You can see on the handout, I've got three things to say. First answer, yes. Just so we're being honest, yes. Becoming a Christian would ruin your life. There's no avoiding is that the language that Jesus uses in the verses that I read. Just look down at verse 34 again. He says, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." And just to notice there's no real euphemism there. Sometimes we might say, "My boss is my cross I have to bear," or something like that. In Jesus' world, the people carrying their cross were the people on their way to be executed. And that's what it means. He means deny yourself, deny your control of your own life, take up your cross, be willing to die, and follow me and die. And just over the page in chapter 10, verse 29, he gives some examples, things that Jesus thinks following him might involve. It says, "There's no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or lands for my sake and for the gospel." And that that list sort of skims through security, your home. It skims through your relationships, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers. It skims through your job and your wealth, home and fields. And you might want to say, that basically is my life. You'll know as well the kind of tabloid-worthy list of things that Jesus says Christians have to do and don't do, on sex or on alcohol or on giving money to the poor. And you might want to say, "Yes, Jesus, that is my life. You've described it exactly. That's my life you want me to give up." And I think that's right. It is my life if the atmosphere is on the "my." Jesus is asking us to give up my life lived for me. And our culture is really strongly wedded to the idea that my life is mine, mine to do with as I want. I belong to me, no one but me, nobody gets to tell me what to do. And I guess in our best moments, we do realize that has some problems to do with selfishness and other people. But I think very few consider what God would make of that decision that my life is mine, would consider that God would have a view. See, Jesus disagrees. My life is mine to do with as I want. Jesus disagrees, shockingly. Jesus says my life belongs to him because he made it. It's a basic Christian claim there about Jesus, that he is Lord, he is God, which means that my life isn't mine, it's his. He gave it to me. And me having my life without reference to God is, well, how would you define that? Is that a kind of theft? Is that a kind of trespass? Or a kind of treason? Something like that, wouldn't it be? if really it's his and I'm living as if it was mine. Let me give you just a few examples so we're clear and there's no small print whatsoever in this. So, for instance, this, you can see this means being a Christian isn't just about Sunday or about Wednesday on a boat in the wharf. This is about how you live in your workplace. It's about how you live with your friends, about how you are everywhere you go. So verse 38 there talks about whoever is ashamed of me and of my words. I wonder, talking to people who work here, whether actually that would be the highest cost, to go into work, to go to your friends and say, I agree with Jesus. I believe the things that he said and he taught. It also clearly means this isn't just for what you do in public, though. This is also about your private life. So Jesus does teach no sex until married, and then if married, sex only with that person for the rest of your life. It's clear as well it has consequences for, I guess, us not being an island. My life is not my own. My relationships matter. Jesus would say that selfishness and pride and convenience friendships couldn't fit here. But also this means it isn't just about big things. The range is total, isn't it? There's nothing in, no part of my life kept as my own that could be mine rather than his and under his lordship. The old phrase used to be the last part of a man to be converted are his wallet and his accelerator pedal foot. And Jesus, yeah, annoyingly, he teaches obedience to the law, which governs the way I drive. And annoyingly, he talks about generosity to those in need, which challenges my wallet. And astonishingly, his attitude to work is that you need to work as if you were working for him, regardless of who is actually sitting behind that desk when you get back to your office. So being a Christian, do you see, is a total commitment to trying to follow Jesus all of the time. You can't take up half a cross. You can't say, execute me, but I'd like to keep my tongue to shout at my kids, or I'd like to keep my wallet for my spending on myself. And this is a total commitment to trying to follow Jesus all of the time. But before you misunderstand me, this is not about success in that, or about hitting a certain pass mark. If you have it open, then you'd notice that just back in verse 31, Jesus announces his own literal death before going on to talk about our denying ourselves and following him. The message of this book is all about free forgiveness because Jesus dies in our place, which means free forgiveness for all our failures, for every way in which we don't live up to Jesus' standards. So the Christian life works like this. I think every morning I wake up and I intend to live for Jesus absolutely in every single area of my life. There can be no fingers crossed at that point. But every day as I trundle through my life, I fail repeatedly in all sorts of different ways. And every day I am forgiven. And every day I go to bed and wake up again and intend to follow him absolutely. There would be no Christians at all if the deal was you had to start obeying these things before you could begin. And there'd be no Christians at all if the deal was you had to hit 50% or something every day in order to stay a Christian. But nor can anyone be a disciple on the deal that they will hold back some area of their life from Jesus. So would Christianity ruin my life? Well, there's no small print in this contract. The answer is yes. Second point, though, would Christianity ruin my life? Well, yes, but your life wasn't so great anyway, which I'm aware is a slightly rude thing to say. And I know there will be time for questions. Please do ask me whatever you'd like to. Tell me what you think. I hope this is to provoke thought and discussion. Please, though, don't hear me as a smug visitor to the wharf. Talking about other people's lives not being so great. This is my life too. I really want to say, is it okay to ask questions about our lives, about the me life that we're so keen to hang on to? The Bible wants to ask, is the life that we want to run our own way, is it so much worth it anyway? Actually, the Bible says the truth is those things about my life, live my way, in overthrow of Jesus, those are the things that are killing me rather than the things that are setting me free. And in general, that's just saying that the Creator's good advice is simply that. It's good advice rather than being repressive or ridiculously strict. I think most people react to the things Jesus says, the sort of do's and don'ts side of it, as if it was ridiculous or repressive. My kind of similar point, low point thing would be a journey on the M4. The Reading services somehow seems to be the low point of that journey. I was there at 10 p.m. the other night, which is a miserable time of day to be there. And I'm sat there trying to keep myself awake. And I noticed the sign on the wall next to me. It says, Moto says, please note that alcohol cannot be consumed anywhere inside or outside these premises. Which he thinks seems a little bit strict, a little bit miserable. Why do they sell alcohol in all of the shops in that service station if they don't really allow you to drink it? And more than that, it's quite a grand claim, isn't it, from Moto? Because anywhere inside or outside these premises includes my house. That's probably not quite what they meant. But that, I think, is the way people react to Jesus. As if, what are you doing? What's God doing with this miserable rules about drinking? Why make alcohol? If you're going to say don't get drunk, or these ridiculous rules that no one can keep, why say never have sex except with the person you're married to? But actually, you only have to open the papers every day to see signs that God's good advice is good advice. So we had the talk over in the ideas store just now, so range of free papers. Had to give them back, that I couldn't bring it with me. Kind of looking through. Today, Ukraine had been knocked off the front page as today's war, and actually there was an article about Iraq and Afghanistan. Someone's done a review of how successful those wars were, and they reckon 100,000 people were killed, 2 million people were made refugees, £26 billion was spent, and we've ended up with more terrorism than we started with. Ukraine did make it in on page 15. There's no easy solution, is there, to any of those regions, any of those conflicts, but you think if at some point over the last 50 years people had begun loving their enemies and turning the other cheek instead of giving in to more anger and more hate, then actually we'd be in a better situation. If people had said make peace between communities instead of escalating danger, maybe God's good advice would have been helpful there. And then on page 6 in the Telegraph, there was a story about elderly people and how many of them apparently are having one conversation a week with another human being and then going a whole week before they speak to another human being. And again, if you're the me life, do everything you want for yourself, that's fine. You're an island, do your own thing. But actually, when you roll that out nationally, it begins to have some terrifying consequences. And then, of course, on page 7, there was the current running sex scandal story with Rolf Harris this time, him kind of singing as his defense, not quite sure how that works. And whatever the outcome, we'll see he's on trial, he may not be guilty. But what is clear as those trials roll through is that the 1960s, 1970s sexual revolution has had some very messy consequences, as one after another, people who were big celebrities in that era are coming to grief, or it's revealing how they hurt other people then. Sex is the sort of classic example, isn't it, of freedom from ridiculous rules. Do what you like as long as nobody's hurt. Well, actually, it seems that some of those situations led to pretty horrendous consequences. Now, I'm not here as a social worker. I imagine probably some of your firms have people who will give you advice on addiction and all those sort of things. That's not the brief here. Just to us, when Jesus talks about how we should live our lives, do you think he's trying to ruin your life or save it? Jesus is saying that the me life is not always so great. And actually, Jesus called to live for others and live for him. That might be the best way to live. And here's a suggestion. If you don't know many Christians, I imagine that Marcus could introduce you to one who's here. And you could sort of follow them, stalk them maybe, watch them live out their lives, and ask yourself, is that a ruined life or is that a good life? And I guess you would see someone who is not perfect. You'd see lots of hypocrisy in the small detail. You'd see them failing to live Jesus' way. But basically, is that a ruined life as they try and put other people first, as they try and do their job honestly? And the most striking example of this I read recently is about the Oscar Pistorius trial that's still going on now, where Mrs. Steenkamp, the mother of the girl who was killed, she said before the trial began, whatever happens, whatever the outcome of the trial, I forgive him. Isn't that an astonishing thing to be able to say? She said that because she's a committed Christian. Is that a ruined life? Or is that a released life? A saved life? Okay, so would becoming a Christian ruin your life? Yes, but... And then third thing, and... giving up your life is the only way to live. So just look down at verse 35 there. Jesus is, I think, giving us a very basic choice. He says, whoever would save his life, as in keep the life to live for yourself, whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. See, even if you don't agree with anything that I've said in point two there, even if you think there's nothing creaking about the me life, yours is flying. Thank you very much, you're loving it. Mark 8 wants to go further. Jesus wants to go further than just say, living for him will improve things now. If you look down at verse 36, verse 37, it's talking about what happens after you die. The Christian claim is that this life is not all there is, and says that even if you gain the whole world now, and I guess from here you really could, probably someone at the top of one of these tower blocks is kind of plotting how by the end of the year they're going to own most of the world or something like it. This would be a good place to start from, wouldn't it? And actually there'd be nothing particularly necessarily anti-Christian about owning a whole load of stuff, owning the whole world. There's nothing particularly anti-Christian about the number of zeros that get printed on your bank statements. But Jesus says, verse 36, even if you did, even if you ended up owning the whole world, verse 37, there is no eBay where you could exchange that for your soul. That market simply doesn't exist. The market where you can trade the things you've achieved in this life for your immortal soul. And your immortal soul, Jesus says, is the most valuable thing that you have. See, actually, Jesus doesn't want to ruin your life. He wants to give you life. And that is partly true. Now we've seen under point two that if you look back over in chapter 10, you'll see that he talks, verse 29, about the things you might have to give up. Sister, brother's house, field says there's no one who's done that who will not receive a hundredfold now in this life, this time. Houses and brothers and sisters and mothers, I think that's talking about you become part of a Christian family. My house is your house now. With persecution, it may not be easy being a Christian. But in the age to come, eternal life is for Jesus the main issue. See, life without God now may be temporarily okay, though I think we can see it leaks massively. But in eternity, 50 years of fun now will sound like a very foolish thing to have sold your future for. Which I think leaves you with at least two pressing areas of investigation to see if you think this is true or not. One would need to be, is Jesus really Lord? Does he really own your life? Is it your life or is it his? You'd want to work out the answer to that. And the second one, I hope, obviously, is what will happen when you die? Are you immortal or will you go in the ground and rot, as Bertrand Russell said? Let me close. We're going to have questions in just a second. Just telling you how I'd answer for myself. Has being a Christian ruined my life? Well, in one sense, yes. Go over the first point. Yes, it has. There's all sorts of things I've not done things I guess I've denied myself, choices I've made. I'd be in a different place, I think, with a different job, probably with a bit more money, if I wasn't a Christian. Second thing, actually, being a Christian has saved me from all sorts of the mistakes I've watched my friends make, where I've tried to live for Jesus, that saved me from things that I can see them regretting. Actually, some of my best days, and those are the days when I do manage to love my wife and love my children, and not make life for my colleagues more difficult. Those aren't my ruined days, and those are my best days. And then on the third point, I know that when I die, Jesus will not be there judging me for whether I've lived up to his standards or not. He'll be there to forgive me and there to give me eternal life because he died. Let me finish there. And I think we go straight into questions, do we? Is that what we normally do? So if anyone, I saw people writing things down as we went, if anyone would like to ask a question, please do kick us off. We've got 5 or 6 minutes.